ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
Hey, good evening, everybody. Thank you for tuning in, and huge thank you to Professor Hamamoto for coming on. He's just finished reading Virginia's book. I'm almost at the end, and we have been reporting on it throughout the week as I've been progressing on it and giving you guys updates if you've been tuned in. And, you know, before we've come on the air, the professor was saying what a kick in the guts it was to read about Virginia's life prior to Jeffrey and the other people, the horrible things that happened. Allegedly, it's been denied by the dad, at the hands of the dad and Uncle Forrest, are some of the most disgusting parts of the whole book. But please follow the professor. I've got all of his links in the description box. You can watch past episodes. You can watch his interview with Lauren that he did a week or so ago, which was brilliant. And he's got tons of content on his channel. He's got an almost two-hour reaction video to Nobody's Girl that he's put up very recently. So I would urge people to watch that as well. So huge thank you for coming on, my friend. But, you know, it's kind of tainted because it's such a dark topic, isn't it? And it's worse than we thought.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation to return, Mr. Atwood. I'm sure we're going to have an incredible conversation. We can learn a good deal from this excellent book. I encourage everybody to pick up a copy. I understand from friends who tried to buy it, it sold out immediately. You might be able to get it as an audiobook, which I did. I have two different versions, the audio, which is excellent, as well as the hard copy, which I showed you. I pre-ordered it, and by the way, while we're at it, I have my own copy of one of your favorite guests here, Mr. Andrew Loney. Excellent book as well. So we're seeing this incredible explosion of material that's being put forth by professionals like Mr. Loney himself. He is an editor and an agent as well as an author, as well as everyday people, people like Virginia Roberts Giuffre, who are making these truths known and disseminating this information that used to be held very tightly within these elite circles. So as awful and as depressing and seamy, let's put it, salacious, as this book is throughout, I see an incredible opportunity to move forward in the name of Virginia Roberts Giuffre and those who go unnamed, scores, hundreds, thousands of people. In fact, before we end today, I want to make it clear that we're talking about a huge integrated global system of, let's use the term, super exploitation to stay out of trouble. That's the term I use. And it's integrated in all the significant institutions of the civilized world, from education, right? We saw this throughout the entire book. Roberts Giuffre, names of individuals from prominent intellectual centers like Harvard and MIT over and over again, and she names them. some of them I've been able to piece together by putting two and two together, because I assume in consultation with the attorneys for both the British edition and the American edition of the books, because the two countries have different libel laws. It's much more stringent in the UK, and somehow they managed to bridge it so far. I don't know. And I encourage for that reason that people buy this as soon as possible, because I suspect there'll be a flurry of lawsuits, and just like there was or actions that have been taken to make sure that subsequent editions are revised to suit the plaintiffs. Or sometimes these books get pulped altogether. I've seen that happen time and time again. So on a mechanical level, this book is really important. I was just so lucky and grateful to have a physical copy in my hand. Now, philosophically, I learned that there's areas of concern that are not being broached. Robert Jaffré herself talks about it, but in general, we're just talking about the more salacious aspects of her super exploitation at the hands of not just family members, but a wide network of professionals, acquaintances, panderers, people in her same age cohort, schoolmates, right? It's so thoroughgoing. But I think she made a very good point that we should start investigating as well. And that is the role that these troubled in America, they're called the troubled teen industry. The complicity of these facilities, these homes that have been set out, the public-private partnerships have been set out to supposedly assist people like Virginia Roberts, who had a troubled childhood and teenage years. She admits that. And we now know the reasons for that type of behavior that go back to her early childhood. But she went into this system, committed to this system by her own parents, and it was an early form of institutional hell. Now, she didn't talk about it too much in the book, but just enough to the point where we have to look at a thoroughgoing system of super exploitation that these institutions aid and abet. Now, my first awareness of the so-called troubled teen industry, it is an industry, it's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm sure some of the parent organizations are listed on the New York Stock Exchange, the London Stock Exchange, the Nikkei, whatever. It's a huge industry. The first time I heard about it was through the Paris Hilton autobiography that came out a couple years ago. And she's talking about how she was abducted out of her own home from her parents, and they're wealthy, right? And taken away to one of these facilities. I think it was out in the Southwest, and it was a living hell. So that made me think back to Virginia Roberts, while she was Roberts at the time, and how she was early on taken in by this series of institutional betrayals. And the Epstein-Maxwell milieu is only one of the later ones. It's one part, an important part, of a larger system of super exploitation that young people are subjected to. And they're not necessarily working class girls such as Virginia Roberts. They could be debutantes, celebutantes like Perry Hilton. I refer to her as Perry because I want to appeal to the upscale audience. I know it's Paris Hilton. And I've seen this time and time again with my own students, talking to them and hearing some of their horrific, and I never really put it together that it was systemic. I thought it was sort of a they went into juvenile detention or the honor farm, these euphemisms there. But I finally realized that these are just horrible hell holes of super exploitation. They're subsidized by the government. In fact, I sent you a report earlier, and I can't really attest to the provenance of it here, but I included it for my Patreon people if you want to look at this close to 300-page report. But he talks about this person here. His name's Dominic La Cavera. I haven't been able to vet who he is, so I want to issue that caveat before reading this. But this paper here, this analysis, is very sound from what I've read. But in it, I'm learning that there is a huge parallel to the Epstein / Maxwell milieu, and it consists of these so-called foster care and orphanage systems. And I know from reading the fiction of, I think his name's Andrew, it's Vax, I think it's pronounced V-A-C-H-H-S. He's a trained attorney, but he also worked in the child welfare system of New York City. But he also wrote novels, which I started reading, and the whole premise is about all the abuses that go on through fiction form in places that he worked. I think he's married to a woman who wrote she's also in so-called the social welfare system. She wrote a book about that and her struggles as an attorney to try to liberate these minors from this oppressive system. And this fits completely within this whole, edifice. It's more of a carryover, I think, of early 20th century, late Victorian America, and in Britain as well, of these alms homes, these workhouses. It's very Dickensian in a more technocratic fashion. It's much more rationalized. But anyway, Vox has written a number of books that talks about this, and he shows, it's kind of a side issue, but he shows the connection between these characters in America. There's a woman named, she was the Attorney General of the state of New York, Letitia James, right? She's one of the black bourgeois leadership that had been put in there in order to carry on the globalist agenda, and various mayors of New York City. They're all Democrats. They're all part of this larger machinery. And this helps to explain why as political establishment, especially the Democratic Party, are so desperate to hang on to power, elective power, because they realize if they lose, they could all wind up in prison. Because they've been working with Wall Street. They've been working with the gray institutional areas, with philanthropy, museums, education institutes, which we've already talked about, social welfare agencies. They're all of a piece, not to mention offshore banking. There's an incredible documentary on the offshoring of the British economy to, guess where, the Caribbean, places like the Virgin Islands. There was a book that came out a few years ago called The Panama Papers that talks about the offshoring of the global economy to these Caribbean entrepôts. And people like, by the way, our own Ian Fleming was on to that very early on. He even moved down there. He moved down to Jamaica to observe it and to oversee the exfiltration of the British economy to the Caribbean. So there'll only be a semblance of a nation left. So it doesn't matter if it's overrun by hordes and hordes of people from all over the world. They have their wealth squirreled away in an area that's untouchable. So there's of course, Robert Jaffray couldn't get into that deeply. And I don't think her co-author, Amy Wallace, has the ability to conceptualize or theorize the enormity of the problem. But that's why we're having this discussion, so that we can take this legacy that Virginia Roberts Giuffre left behind her and take it forward to really get at the root of the problem. It's not a root. It's like a rhizomatic system. It's a rhizome.
So Lady C did a video yesterday, and I know she was criticized about using certain terminology regarding Virginia, but she did a completely different video yesterday, and that was, she basically said that she had inside information from multiple countries that Israel had Virginia whacked because they knew the prime minister was going to be mentioned in the book, and people would put it together. They would figure out allegedly it was Ehud Barak, and they had her whacked, and they did it in a way that made it look like she did it to herself. The allegations against the prime minister were some of the most brutal in the book, whereby not only was she essayed and R-worded, this guy was getting aroused by choking her unconscious, and she was struggling for days afterwards with injuries in her neck and throat region. And she was forced to see this person again. She said to Epstein she didn't want to see him. And he said, well, it's just part of your job, basically. Get on with it. And this is one of the things that made light bulb go off over her head, breaking out of the Stockholm syndrome, telling herself, he doesn't care for me. I got to get the hell out of here. And then it was the next thing was the signing over the baby, pressure to have a baby and sign over the baby. They were the two triggers. But Professor, what do you think about Lady C's theory that Virginia was perhaps unalived by Israeli intelligence?
Now, I have not seen the video, but I've read your assessment of it, and I've read some analyses of Lady C's video, but I will watch it. So far as I remember, the name Ehud Barak appeared in the journalism of people like, I think Kirby Summers had written about it years ago. His name was well known. Why did it take all those years after his name was well known? I certainly knew it. For them to catch up with Virginia Roberts Giuffre in Western Australia, why wouldn't they have silenced her early on? I think the true impediments to her, now I'm walking on thin ice here. I think the true impediments to her getting the full truth out were her own attorneys, people like David Boies. And I'm sorry if you're trying to get him on air on your show. I apologize to the man, but I don't trust the guy from what I know about him and read about him. He seems very avuncular and friendly, grandfatherly, and caring. I've seen many, many interviews with him, and you kind of feel sorry for him because he talks about being dyslexic. But this guy has been at the center of all these different cases, time and time. I'm not just talking about Virginia Roberts Giuffre. I'm talking about Harvey Weinstein all the way down. He always seems to be there, like a disputed election between Al Gore and George Bush, right? He's always there. He's like the fixer, and he's always coming on as sort of the mediating person. But I think he is there as what I refer to as a lint trap. He catches the material that otherwise would clog up the machinery. He's up there. So while I don't discount the possibility that America's greatest and most faithful ally in the Middle East, I don't doubt that they're capable of doing that. I don't see that as being the proximate cause of her untimely demise, Virginia Roberts Giuffre. I tend to think that accumulation of physical problems, longstanding mental issues, the child custody problems, as well as horrific physical abuse on the part of her husband of 20 years, who the one person you would hope you could trust, finally drove her to what you refer as self-pharmacide.
Okay, well, the other side of Lady C's theory was that the media had been set up to just completely have all the headlines about Prince Andrew to protect the other names in the book. Do you think that there's any veracity to that?
Yeah, there's a great deal of veracity in that statement. But again, if we put our heads together, we can. Virginia Giuffre and her co-author Amy Walls left enough clues there for us to piece together who she was not naming, probably to avoid lawsuits in the UK. In America, you can get away with putting some names out a lot easier than you can in Britain. There was a famous case, Deborah Lipstadt versus David Irving, a historian, right? And he was sent to prison. In fact, when he went to Germany, he was jailed. So there are serious repercussions for putting names in here. But it's enough for us who have been following the case to be able to piece together our own profile. There's enough information in there that, for example, well, I won't say his name on your show, but I know who the psychologist was from Harvard who was availing himself of Virginia Roberts, her services. I pieced it together and I put him in.
You can name him and say allegedly.
Well, okay, allegedly. What is his name here? I forgot. I've been trying to block it. But he ran a multi-million-dollar research institute on neuroscience. He's a psychologist. He's a cognitive psychologist. I don't have his name at hand right here. Maybe purposely I blotted it out. But anyway, it's been closed down at Harvard. Harvard produced a huge self-study of the relationship between the university and certain professors like Dershowitz, as well as Marvin Minsky, supposedly one of the co-founders of AI. And they washed their hands of the case. They said, well, we've done our self-study. Everything's hunky-dory now. Of course, that's not true. And this person has subsequently retired from Harvard. He's now listed as a emeritus faculty. And guess what? He started up his own little university. So these characters are still around. Their name should be circular. I mentioned him in my own talk on Sunday. I've already put it out of my mind. And they should be held accountable in the court of public opinion. These sleazebags are running. And of course, Alan Dershowitz is still out there denying everything. Right? He was complicit. His name surfaces in independent reports, government reports, court documents, you name it. He was, at minimum, a facilitator of this Epstein-Maxwell milieu. I think another important part, contribution of Nobody's Girl, and Amy Wallace has taken up the cudgel because, of course, Virginia Roberts Giuffre is no longer with us, is that it would be a travesty of justice if Ghislaine Maxwell was ever allowed to see the light of day, short of the full sentence, I think it's of 20 years, that she was supposed to fill in a prison, not in a club, sort of a white-collar criminal type of country club environment. So we, as the public, can make our political will known that this should not happen under the Bondi, who's the Attorney General regime, or under the watch of Bill Clinton. And neither should he pardon his buddy, Sean John Combs. Right? They're kind of edging us up to that as well, we the public, right? If there's going to be justice, it has to be applied equally for everybody, regardless of how much money you have in your bank, how much wealth you've amassed to pay off the various actors in this farce. It should be, I know it's asking for a lot and maybe overly idealistic, but we have to at least make an attempt to hold our own system of justice accountable to the will, to the popular will. So let's keep that energy up, right? Rearrest her, reincarcerate her, put her in there, find out more. And, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when we talked about the interview with Todd Blanche from the so-called Justice Department. We kind of went into his biography and his whole greasy, sycophantic, fake interview of Maxwell, which wasn't even done behind bars. It was she negotiated a number of points in her favor by her highly paid attorneys. So she was already calling the shots from behind bars. Now this rubs the American and the British, the international public, the wrong way. We know that that's a miscarriage of justice if she ever is freed. So we should keep the pressure up in that regard. And Amy Wallace has been, in the interviews I've seen with her subsequent to the publication of the book, that's been one of the main themes. Also, I want to give props to the younger brother, Sky Roberts, and his wife, Amanda, who was on a Channel 4 show, not American Channel 4, but the British Channel 4. It was a really good interview, and I would like to give the person who interviewed her, her name is Jackie Long. Are you familiar with her? Jackie Long? Okay, well, she is a reporter for Forecast, Channel 4. But she had an incredible interview with Sky Roberts and Amanda Roberts. They were both incredibly articulate, and they were both expressing the need for accountability and for the full administration of justice for all the people who were involved. And we're not seeing them on American television, even in Indian media. I myself did not even know. I mean, I read about Sky D or Sky Roberts in the book. He was younger by 5 years and they were very close, but I didn't even know he could articulate these complex issues in such a great manner. And his wife was incredible too. I want to find out what she does for a living. Right. So anyway, between all the different platforms in different countries, I've seen some good reportage, by the way, from Indian media. Why? I'm not sure. Maybe because they don't have a direct dog in the fight. But it's mostly been American and British media that have been following here. We have a lot of material here that we can follow up on for the future, for the immediate and long-term future.
So is Sky the one who stopped speaking to the father after Virginia alerted her siblings what had happened to her because she was worried about the grandkids because the father was accessing the grandkids?
Well, there are two brothers. She has an older brother and she has the younger brother, Sky. I don't know which one cut himself off from the father, which hurt him, the father, deeply. But Virginia had to tell her brothers separately about her super exploitation at the hands of her own family. And they believed her. Both her older and her younger brother believed her right off the bat. They took no they didn't have to be convinced of it. But since that time, I think you're alluding to, they made sure that their own children were protected from their grandfather. Right. And that's brings up the whole issue. We're talking about a multi-generational problem here. I could use the word trauma if you like, but it's multi-generational. It's not just restricted to one person in one place and time. So we're talking about generations go through. Perhaps her father was also a victim. I mean, she alludes to that fact, but does that excuse him from perpetrating these types of crimes against his own flesh and blood and bringing in other people as well. That's also in the book if you want to check it out. And I think it also answers the question is, why didn't she flee the Epstein Maxwell milieu? Why didn't she just walk away from it? Well, she makes it quite clear that that's all she's known. That is really the story of her life. So you're telling her to, oh, just leave your life behind entirely. You can't do it. She is like a fish in a gold in a bowl there. That's her environment. Why would she think of ever leaving that? That's one of the main criticisms. The other criticism was that she accepted settlements or money for her pain, I guess. I think that's kind of a stretch. I don't know what these people who are criticizing her, what they have to gain by making these types of accusations and questioning her integrity. I don't know what they, and some of them are YouTube celebrities who are making these crazy claims. I'm going to take her at her word. This book was very well researched. It was vetted. It went through the hands not only of Amy Wallace, but I'm sure the publishers had lawyers and went through it line by line to avoid criminal or litigation of some sort, whether it be in the UK or in the United States.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters. On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at coda.com.
So I trust the book for the most part. Now, it's not going to give us an analytical framework that you might be able to come up with or myself. But within the scope of Amy Wallace's expertise, she's a professional ghostwriter. She's not an expert in the New World Order or the super exploitative transportation of certain types of precious cargo. She doesn't know that, I don't think. But she does have years and years of professional experience to help realize a monumental project like this. This is a landmark publication, so far as I'm concerned. Everybody needs to read it. I have a friend myself who has bought multiple copies. She's bought these copies for all her relatives so they can educate their children on how the world really works. In the most unlikely institutional settings, there are all kinds of creepy people out there in the clergy, in the church, in the temple, at the university in particular. And when I read the parts about the university, that really hit home because I've never even been to Palm Beach, West Palm Beach. I've never been to the Virgin Islands. I don't go to all these fantastic resorts, and I don't get to rub shoulders with all the people who are living large, right? The lifestyles of the rich and famous. That's not my world. But the academic world is my world. And when I'm reading all this material, I said, yes, of course, I've seen it too. I've seen how these lizards operate, these slimy individuals, and they use their power and they use their position as covers for all manner of abuse, not just immediate gratification, but also to come up with incredible pharmaceuticals and Therapies. There you go. Marvelous Marvin Minsky. He is the disciple of the Golem. He's got to be a Sabbatean Frankist. He has turned his face away from God. He is with God now. He's dead. But here's a guy who is into AI. This is the irony. He wants robotic. He wants sex robots. He has no room for Goyisha humanity anymore. This is Marvelous Marvin Minsky. But guess what? As perverse, as sick and demented as it was, Marvelous Marvin Minsky, the father of so-called artificial intelligence, needed human touch. Even if he had to be pimped into those positions by his buddy or buddies, Jeffrey Epstein and Glenn Maxwell. Ironic, isn't it? You would think that he would just be happy with his battery-operated devices and pleasuring himself with them instead of flying all the way down to little Jeffrey Island to the massage rooms. Or perhaps in at Cambridge, which, by the way, Jeffrey Epstein had his own office at Harvard University in the psychology department. Here's a guy that didn't even graduate from college. He has an office. And if you have an office at a university, that's like gold, because that's the only status that we fight for. Like, who's got the bigger office? And Jeffrey Epstein had an office, but he had one at Harvard, no less, thanks to some of his buddies, the deans over at Harvard. And of course, they're, as I told you, they all went scot-free.
Yeah, so in the book, Virginia describes being told to go with a few guys who are in the 70s. I think she says at least two of them were award-winning scientists. And she does name Minsky, who's on the screen. Professor mentioned reptilian-looking people. He certainly fits the category. And later on, you know, when she's trying to have relations with her husband, the memories of the things she was forced to do with these reptilian-looking people come back to her, and she's not able to have normal relations with her husband. It's a real struggle. Also, memories come back to her of what she's alleged her father and his buddy, who was introduced as Uncle Forrest, traded daughters, had his own stepdaughter, traded daughters, doing the most foul things. She said those memories came back to her as well, and she couldn't do certain things with her husband. And I found that some of that, the most gut-wrenching, was reading in the graphic detail that she gives of what her father and Uncle Forrest do to her. And then there comes a point where Uncle Forrest finds God, gets on his knees, gets her on her knees, like he had so many times before, she says, and then blames her, basically, for being a Jezebel. Yes. This started from age 7, and they're blaming her.
Mm-hmm.
Disgusting.
Yes, I remember that whole section vividly. And I remember especially the torment that her husband, Robbie, I believe his name is, had to endure by sitting in these interviews. These were like depositions where she had to repeatedly provide details of her super exploitation at the hands of these miscreants, such as Professor Marvelous Marvin Minsky. So he had to hear this himself, and at some points he was just so angry at the questioners, and he would say that you guys are so sick. You're enjoying listening to all these graphic details. He had to walk, but he was tormented himself. Now, I'm not excusing his alleged behavior and whatever, but I can't help but believe that that was sort of the proximal event, the central event of their lives that created all this tension that resulted, right? Even though she was, and it comes through in the book, even though she was trying to put together her own happy family with her three children and taking them to see Santa Claus every Christmas time and getting a family photo. She wanted that so badly. There was this original sin that was at the heart of her marriage that finally manifests itself in such a violent and ugly way in fashion. That's the way I'm looking at it. And all these characters, they probably, you know, Marvelous Marvin Minsky, he could probably care less. You know, he was just writing his research papers on how robots are going to take over the world and humanity scum. And we're just a bunch of venal, low creatures who don't really belong in the world, so we can just automate everything. But this is who he was affecting directly. And she describes Marvin Minsky vividly. She has really good, strong powers. She's a visual person. She's an artist, visual artist person. I'm talking about Virginia Roberts Giffray. So she remembers these characters quite well, because that was one of the accusations leveled against her. Well, gee, that's such a long time ago. How do you remember who was who and who was who? But she described Marvelous Marvin Minsky as looking like one of those shrunken peaches. You have these little folk dolls that have peaches that have dried up faces. That's him. You put a bonnet on him and a dress, like in the movie Psycho, and that's Professor Marvelous Marvin Minsky, the founder of AI. Just think of him when you look at, when you next go through your chat GPT. This is his consciousness that you are trying to circumvent when you're using tools like that.
Yeah, and against her husband's advice, she tries to rebuild her relationship with her father, who does come over only to start behaving inappropriately with her, holding her hand, trying to dance with her, and then what crosses the line completely and causes her husband to almost unalive the guy is he shows Virginia nude photos on his phone.
Mm-hmm.
That's just incorrigible.
Yeah, this guy is beyond reform. Now, I don't know how typical he is of these individuals, but it doesn't seem like anything changes them, because they've talked about, so-called therapists especially, have talked about chemical castration, rehabilitation, therapy, this, that, and the other, right? And I will not say publicly what I think should happen to people like that, okay? But I think they're beyond that, really. There are certain human beings who violate every single norm of society, of the human group. He's one of them. Yeah.
And here's the guy, I'm going to put a picture up, who the New York Times has alleged through the court filings, because she said people will figure this out because of the court filings. Here is the prime minister that the New York Times has alleged, by the New York Times, is the one that was aroused by choking Virginia so severely she went unconscious and she was injured in her neck for days. Ehud Barak. Mm-hmm. And begged Jeffrey not to go back to him, be sent back to this guy, but was indeed told it's part of the job and was sent back to him again. And this is one of the things that caused her to want to get the hell out of the spider's web.
And I don't know if that's an IDF, Israeli Defense Force uniform.
Yep, chief of staff.
Is that what it is? Okay, that's him. The government of Israel, from its inception, has been really it's been governed by a military junta, right? They'll wear suits when it's time to get money and handout from Donald Trump, but at least Arafat was honest and Castro was honest by wearing the military uniform. That's who they are. That's our friend William Jefferson Clinton in the middle, and to the left, Ehud Barak.
And let's not forget our friend
who was poisoned to death. What's it?
Ari Ben-Menashe told us that he had it on good authority that the peace deal that was being brokered at this point in time was scuppered by compromise on Bill Clinton that had been obtained by Epstein.
Uh-huh. So Epstein goes that far back, all the way to the presidency of Clinton.
He said that, Epstein had special access to the White House through the back through some.
He had special access to the White House. He had his own faculty office at Harvard. He had his research compound in New Mexico. He had extraterritorial privileges in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Wow, this guy's like a pirate. Right? I think piracy is his nation.
And Juliet Bryant flew around the world with Epstein's plane when Clinton was on it, and Kevin Spacey and all these other people, and on the humanitarian missions, of course.
Yeah, were they trying to rescue children by any chance?
Yeah,
poor black Haitian children.
In Africa, they went to Africa.
There you go. By the way, I came across an excellent documentary. Came out 2021. It's called Buck Breaking. And it gets into the African and Caribbean girls, because I'm talking about minors now, females, minors, who were on St. James, Little St. James, who were exploited. We're looking at primarily Virginia Roberts Giuffre and some of the supermodels, the Eastern European girls and women that were brought in, and Americans. But there are lots of black girls and women and Caribbean types, which are not talked about. This film does. This documentary does talk about it. So I recommend it. I mean, there's some problems with the documentary. He has some kinds of weird ice people theory versus the black people, the solar people, the equatorial people. But if you get beyond that, the people who are interviewed here show that the whole Epstein-Maxwell milieu has to include the people of the darker races. And on the show that you did quite, I think maybe it was yesterday even, you talked about Peter Nygaard, right? Who was ostensibly a manufacturer of clothing, but he was a front for these experiments. Who were the people, the women that he liked to harvest genetic material from? Black African women and Caribbean women in specific, not the Eastern European supermodel types that we focus on in these books about Virginia Roberts Giuffre, but the other parts. So let me also bring in another part of the world, the yellow world, when we're talking about super exploitation of women and children. People from the yellow part of the world, beginning with the Philippine-American War, through the Russo-Japanese War, through the Pacific War, Korean War, and Vietnam War, over and over. And you saw this huge transportation network of super exploited women and children to America. And if any of the viewers want to research this, it's time that people start writing articles and books about the Korean Little Angels. It was a little troop of girls, underage females, who were taught traditional, supposedly oriental arts of dancing, South Korea. and they were transported to the U.S. in the late 50s to the present day, and they would go entertain congressmen and lobbyists in Washington, D.C., all because they wanted money from D.C. to South Korea, their big East Asian ally over there. And again, they use this super exploitative system in order to move money. That's Peter Nygaard right there. He liked the black bodies. Just like Ed Buck, the big Democratic Party donor who's now sitting in prison, thank goodness. He was the recipient of a huge network of black, male, gay, homeless, down and out, impoverished men like Jeffrey Dahmer, the serial killer. He preyed on these men of color because they were the most vulnerable. I'm talking about Ed Buck. And same with Peter Nygaard. There's something on TubeU with him interviewing all these African and Caribbean black women saying, yes, I want your genetic material because I'm going to live forever. I have the secret to immortality thanks to the superior black genetics. Oh, thank you very much, Ellie Garcia. These are unpleasant pieces of information, but this is the art of cultural forensics, as I call it. There he is there. That's him on the right, not the left. I don't know who that is on the left, but yeah, there's a couple of books about Nygaard, not very much. He's an important character, an important player in this whole network.
Her name's Peter Nicole Nygaard. Midwin. Nicole Midwin.
I'm not familiar with her story, but. Oh, by the way, yeah, another point that came to me in reading some of this literature as inspired by the Virginia Roberts Giuffre book is that, you know, there was a whole wave of models that looked really like starving, and they used to call it heroin chic, led by people like Kate Moss. They looked like they had just been taken out of orphanages and they were made into supermodels. Well, it's finally the penny dropped in reading this article. There's a whole connection there between orphanages and state-run institutions for wayward girls, troubled teens, the ones that are starved and super exploited, and modeling. That's what was being broadcast to us on TV or published in Vanity Fair by the British intelligence agency agent Anna Wintour with Vanity Fair, the Condé Nast publications. That was the type that we were being shown, just like the Victoria's Secret catalog, Leslie Wexner's operation. These are all parts of the cultural engineering system. So what we can learn is that whatever's put in front of our face, approach it with a great deal of skepticism automatically. Right? It could be someone who's friendly looking, like a David Boies. It could be someone who looks like Roger Corman, the guy that makes all those slasher, horror, low-budget movies and is lauded as a big film innovator by people from Martin Scorsese to you name it, all the people that came through his system. By the way, Jack Nicholson is a discovery of Roger Corman, but he presents himself like someone who went to Stanford University. He's a gentleman and a scholar. By the way, he did. He has a degree in engineering from Stanford, Roger Corman. But his function is to scare the life out of us in the drive-in theaters with our girlfriend while we're having sexual pleasure. So you bring in the violence and the sex at the same time, and you create a whole generation of people who carry that through the next phase of these slasher movies Scream, and Halloween. We're almost at Halloween, by the way. This is all part of the cultural engineering of all these different psychopaths, these sickos, these slashers, these killers. And then you have these ladies, serial killer junkies, hybristophiliacs, like Professor Catherine Ramsland. I asked that question there purposely to see how your guest would react, because I know he knows her. Right, you have all these wacky psychologist women who are like experts on Ted Bundy because he makes them excited sexually. Because most guys have zero juice anymore. We have the testosterone bred out of us. It's gone. So they're going for the guys who like, oh, yeah, I'm going to take it all the way, baby. Yeah, they want to write love letters to Richard Ramirez, the Zodiac Killer. They want Luigi Mangione to make love to them because he's the only guy that has any balls to do anything in life. Okay, this is the cultural forensics perspective on what seems to be unrelated phenomena. They all come together at a certain point.
Okay, so in the book, then, she mentions billionaire one, billionaire two, and billionaire three. Yes. Have you done any research on who they may be?
I'm still scratching my head on that one. I think one of them is Bill Gates. That's kind of easy, right? The other two, I'm not really sure about. But they're in tech. They're Silicon Valley type people, or Washington, state of Washington type people. Oh, by the way, I should mention that Amy Wallace has all those names. She has those of all. They didn't make it into the book, but she has a whole file that's under lock and key. It's not in her house. It's in a safe area. But all that information was shared by Virginia Roberts Giuffre with Amy Wallace. It just didn't make it into the book.
So at the beginning of the book, she's saying that Virginia, it was her wishes not to name certain people for certain reasons. Do you think that's valid, or do you think that the legal read expelled a lot of names?
I think it was legitimate, because some of the names are incidental. They're not necessarily involved in the specific activities. So you don't want to bring them into it unnecessarily. Some of the well-known individuals like Bill Gates, that's public knowledge. That's so far out in the public imagination that we don't have to really mince our words. But the other people, we have to do more research on that. So there were strategic, to answer your question, there were strategic reasons. One, to avoid lawsuits in the UK. And secondly, to preserve the life of Amy Wallace, because she's in physical jeopardy, I would imagine. And I think she's hinted at it as well in some of the interviews. And in the book itself, Nobody's Girl, Virginia Roberts Giuffre talks about how she was gang stalked and she was targeted. She was harassed relentlessly. And Jeffrey Epstein himself, I'm not sure who that is. Is he a billionaire?
Kirby Summers has put a name in the chat, Glenn Dubin.
Oh, okay.
That's what he looks like. And we would love to get Kirby on to discuss this at some point as well. That would be great.
Well, since her pick is up there, I would say read her book. Kirby Summers and Sean Atwood, by the way, have been on this story for years and years and years. A lot of what you were reading today by the pop-up pundits came directly stolen from Kirby Summers and Mr. Sean Atwood. Because I have the books. I've been reading them. There's one of them. Yeah.
Jeffrey, I have a copy too. By Kirby Summers. Kirby is prolific. Mm-hmm. There's tons. She's written tons. She's relentless.
Yes. And she has all kinds of inside information. And she is not being fully credited for her contribution. So it's due to people like yourself, like Kirby Summers and others, too numerous to name, truly independent journalists who have kept the story warm. I mean, this is, has been a really a victory for the public intellectual, because it's not coming from the publishers, the mainstream publishers and newspapers, right, until they were forced. I mean, I was surprised that Knopf would, you know, Alfred A. Knopf would publish this, but it's because the story is so prevalent in the minds, the understanding of the public, that they just had to publish the book.
Do you have time to answer some viewer questions, Professor?
Absolutely. I like this segment.
All right. I've been hogging you for an hour. So we are live with the Professor. And if you've got any questions, wherever you are watching in the world, we've got over 1,500 watching right now. Please put your questions in the live chat. And also, if you're watching on replay, you can watch our previous episodes with the Professor. You can join him on his YouTube channel and on his Facebook. All the links are down there. And I'll put Professor's YouTube link in the live chat as well right now. Yeah, Whitney Webb does talk a lot about Peter Thiel and Palantir. Do you have any thoughts on Palantir? I've been watching the stock market price go up and up and up, and they get huge contracts from the defense in America.
Well, from what I can tell, they are an arm of the Defense Department, DOD. And Silicon Valley, you might as well call it DARPA Valley. And it's also been penetrated by all the major intelligence networks, from Mossad to China, you name it. Peter Thiel is not a nice man. I don't know if he's one of those billionaires that were going on the aircraft down to Little St. James, but he definitely is. It, does that mean it's going up, the stocks, 189?
Yeah, if you go back to 2023, it was $6, and now it is almost 200.
Yeah.
And Wexner, he put a lot of money into CoreWeave, which is AI as well. I think Facebook just did a huge deal with them. And Wexner's made billions off CoreWeave recently.
All right. Well, you point up a very important analytical tool. Look at the investment patterns of some of these characters, like Leslie Wexner, and see where they're putting their money. Follow the money, right? We know that one.
Yeah, CoreWeave jumped.
Peter Thiel, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, all these characters are not to be trusted.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters. On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at coda.com.
Yep, follow the money. Mm-hmm. All right, let me get your next question. Here we go. Thank you, Judy, for the super chat. Agent Orange, what are your thoughts on a private billionaire donating $130 million to the military?
This, I'm not aware of that happening. Is there a name attached to that? Yeah.
This is just a separate little story on that kind of activity. It came out recently that Boris Johnson allegedly received over $1 million from a drone operating company person to scupper the peace deal with Ukraine. It's like they wanted every last Ukrainian, squeeze every last drop of blood out of that country so there's nobody left so they can maximize their profits, these sickos. So Agent Orange, my thoughts on a private billionaire donating $130 million. This is standard operating procedure. These guys control defense policy just like Enron controlled energy policy. These wars are run for the companies. They donate tens of millions to the politicians on both sides. So whoever wins the election, they keep the contracts rolling. And these contracts are in the multi-billions. Look at how much the U.S., at least they're not even calling it defense anymore. They're open about it now, aren't they? The Department of War. Look how much of taxpayers' money gets handed over to Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, etc. All right, let's get off that because it's not Virginia related. Have you got something to add?
Yes, one other group that hasn't been mentioned enough. We talked about the academics and the politicians and the usual suspects, but I think the retired generals and colonels have to be looked at very carefully. They're the ones who are the immediate beneficiaries of this largesse that's going through retired military personnel. So you have all these retired generals and colonels on right-wing conservative media in America who are talking about, oh, the Chacom's this or Venezuela that. These are guys who are double-dipping, and they're usually consultants, quote-unquote, with these so-called defense agencies. I bet there's all kinds of video material on the retired generals and colonels. And there's nothing braver on the face of the earth than a retired general, because she's only too happy to put young men in danger, in harm's way, get their lungs burned out or being blown away by drones.
Never their own kids for these chicken hawks, though.
Of course not.
All right. So Judy's saying, Professor, don't you think it is a huge coincidence that Virginia's daddy introduced Virginia to the owner of Mar-a-Lago only after 2 days of her being employed there?
Well, I think you know the answer by the way you phrased the question. Yeah, he's complicit. And she doesn't say that in the book herself, but in my mind, my reading of it, he is a pimp. Her own father pimped his own daughter, Virginia, which, given his own behavior, that's really not that far-fetched. And in the book, she also said that someone told her privately that Jeffrey Epstein paid her off, or paid him off, to be quiet. He took money from Jeffrey. Her own father took money from Jeffrey Epstein. So, I think that's plausible. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to raise that point. She's alleging that early on, she had no idea that her own father took hush money from Epstein.
Right.
All right. Amy's saying, Virginia could have insisted on bringing charges on Andrew, but instead she opted for cash. Not that I fault her, but what about the other men who she claimed strangled and bloodied her? The other man. It was one man she claimed strangled, not multiple. Mm-hmm. She was essayed by multiple. Mm-hmm. But it was the main man that people are alleging is Ehud Barak was the strangler. So the question is then, why isn't she got charges against cases against these other men? I think that's the question.
Okay. I hinted at this earlier by talking a little bit about David Boies, but you can also talk about McCauley, or she had a number of attorneys. I think they were the ones who said, hey, take the money. It solves two problems. And then we're going to seal off any further information on some of these high, high, high level people, whether it's royalty or heads of state. Right. And that's his job, really. And in his mind, he can sleep at night because he got her a big payday, supposedly. But she wasn't in it for that. Yeah.
Because there was a part in the book where she's calling out him because his firm is representing Weinstein.
Yes.
He gives a really bizarre excuse.
Yeah.
That raised my eyebrows as if he was.
It's in parentheses, kind of like, right?
Yeah.
I know the exact, because that stuck out at me too. It's kind of a weak justification of why he was working for humble Harvey Weinstein.
After purporting to be a champion of the survivors.
Right. He's a champion for wherever's going to bring him some fees to his company.
So, question from BD. Did Virginia say anything about Dubin's wife, Eva? Were Eva and Ghislaine pals? Didn't something go on with their daughter of that couple to do with Epstein?
I'm not sure. That's a question for Kirby Summers.
Yeah. Kirby, are you still there?
Because she has gone. See, what I mean, I like her work on a number of levels, but she talks a lot about some of these people who are seemingly on the periphery. They really are central to the story, but for some reason, they don't get a lot of attention in the press or in the publications. I mean, even unlikely characters like Gerald Ford, former president of the United States, right? All these characters have some really bizarro pasts.
Yeah, so let's see.
Or the true founder of Victoria's Secret. She has this whole story. It was not Leslie Wexner's genius that came up with Victoria's Secret. There's some guy in San Francisco who jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge or the Bay Bridge supposedly in a suicide. And then the holdings came into the hands of Leslie Wexner, which, by the way, I mean, it's not directly related to our conversation here, but I think a lot of what is being presented as a political, ideological battle is truly just good old-fashioned mob warfare, extortion. And I will say it again, because I haven't heard this perspective being presented anywhere else except on the Sean Atwood show, and that is that Charlie Kirk was the victim of a good old-fashioned organized crime hit. The Israel stuff is really secondary. They wanted in on USA Turning Point. It was a multi-million-dollar nonprofit entity that they felt that they helped build up. And they said, okay, it's time for you to kick in what you owe us. And he said, no, thanks. And we all know what happened after that. The simplest explanation is usually the best explanation.
Mikey wants to know, did Virginia say anything about Conchita Sarnoff, the first person to interview her?
I don't recall that, no. She might have, but I missed it.
Unless she used a different name for her.
She might have. If she has the name of Sarnoff, that is suspicious. She's probably related to the communications David Sarnoff people, NBC, Conchita. That's what I'm guessing.
What do you think happened when Virginia posted that she only had 3 days to live? Didn't they cover that in the introduction to the book?
I believe so. There is a long prologue by Amy Wallace talking about the circumstances of the publication. But I know that she was in an auto accident for sure, and she had some kidney problems, and she wanted to see her children before she passed on. I don't know if that's what Liz E. is alluding to.
She confided to Amy about the spousal violence as well.
Uh-huh.
So, Jen, why didn't Virginia get dialysis and stay alive?
That I don't know.
Is there any evidence that Nygaard and Epstein were connected? Well, Prince Andrew would be the connection, because he was visiting them both. Let's see. Was the Epstein network the same as the Franklin scandal network? Well, Nick Bryant covers this brilliantly. What do you think about that one, Professor?
I think there are multiple networks. They probably ran in parallel, or they overlapped, or they were contiguous. I don't think they had a direct relationship there. But by the question, the question is implying that there's that the Epstein Maxwell milieu is just one of many, right? And again, when we're talking about the Franklin scandal, we're talking about the orphanage, so-called troubled teen business, because it traces back to Boys Town in Omaha, Nebraska, founded by the friendly Irish Catholic priest, Father Flanagan. And I have articles right here, by the way, that talk about Boys Town specifically. And it's published by the Des Moines, that's Des Moines, Iowa, where Iowa's the state where Boys Town is. It says, here are prominent Boys Town cases of super exploitation reported over the years. This is a compendium of stories. So the public knows the story. They know about the Franklin scandal, thanks to Nick Bryant and John DeCamp and other people who have written extensively on it. There are multiple networks. I myself live right on a key transportation corridor from Mexico through California, Oregon, and Washington up to Canada. It's called Interstate 5. And that is one of the major arteries of the transportation of all this illicit cargo. And they go through all these. Yes.
Kirby just put in the chat, my research indicates Franklin and Epstein rings are indeed connected. Okay. And you've got a question. You've got a question from Omar. Why is Wexner not under investigation?
Wow. He's protected. I don't know the specifics, but I think it has something to do with his close connection to America's best partner in the Middle East, the only democracy amidst a gaggle of hostile Muslim people, right? The old Rothschild Empire. I think he's one of their arms. But so was Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Brandeis. He was a Zionist. This Wexner is just one of many of a whole history of American Zionists. This is not only, it's just now being exposed to the general public. But if you read the history, it's all there. Even back down to colonial times, Alexander Hamilton. There was a Broadway play, Hamilton. He was raised in the Caribbean, Jamaica, that whole area under the slave conditions. And he was raised as a Jew himself. This is Alexander Hamilton. So this is part of the American saga.
When Maria Farmer told us about getting S-A'd at the Wexner property, she called the cops, and the cops said, we're already there. Wexner pays us to protect the property. We're right outside. So there was no help coming for her. And Wexner's he's worth so many billions. He's in the untouchable class. He's up there with Bill Clinton and the rest of them. All relishing the heat on Prince Andrew right now, obfuscating their own alleged evil deeds.
Yes, and he's a product of the great American Midwest. He's a graduate of Ohio State University, which is an American football powerhouse. And they have all this, you know, just like he's in front of the American flag, he hides behind all these, the university, in his case, Ohio State, the football team, just like Penn State. That's also a school where super exploitation is the norm, just like the University of Idaho, where those four students were killed And by the way, one of your guests was a professor there at the University of Idaho, the guy who's a specialist on Crowley 666. He taught at the University of Idaho. Did he know Brian Koberger? I think Brian Koberger knew about him, right? So we see these patterns being repeated in seemingly the most unlikely places. Idaho, Utah, Ohio.
How deep do you think Epstein's connection was with the MIT Media Lab? Could any of Jeffrey's information have been stored there?
Well, by their own self-study, MIT administration showed that the head of the Media Lab, Joe Ichi Ito, and he resigned, was funneling millions of dollars from Epstein to the MIT people. And the MIT Media Lab, by the way, is a product of the Negroponte people. They're steeped in intelligence. They come from shipping, which, of course, you're talking about maritime law and the law of the seas. You're talking about Aristotle Onassis and Stavros Niarchos. These shipping families are very, very important to the New World Order. And the Negroponte people, bloodline, is key there. And they're the ones that started the MIT Media Lab. And they had Joichi Ito as an asset. And as I mentioned in my yesterday talk about MIT, Joichi Ito was a rent boy from Kabukicho in Tokyo, because the intelligence networks and all the Japan experts, and it's going on in China right now too, they are all homosexual males from the intelligence, and they find people like Joichi Ito, and they're finding Arabs too now. Currently, they're exfiltrating from their countries and bringing them to places like Minneapolis, Minnesota, San Francisco, New York. This guy Mandami is obviously an Arab intelligence asset that was brought in through the intelligence agency. Joichi Ito fits that profile. He was a rent boy in Kabukicho. And he doesn't even have a degree. He doesn't have a college degree, and he became the head of the MIT Media Lab. Sounds fishy to me.
Yeah. Question from Omar. Did Council of Foreign Relations members of the media protect Jeffrey?
I don't know the specifics, but I think you can probably assume that that is the case. There's a famous story that I won't repeat of the ABC. I think it was written about in the book here, about the ABC reporter. I think it was ABC, American Broadcasting Corporation, who interviewed or was doing the story on the Epstein milieu, and it was spiked. The story was spiked because the upper level executives at the networks are CFR.
All right, next question. How are you getting on with Entitled?
Oh, it's just so juicy. I mean, from a simple teen romance level to some heavy, heavy deep state information on the teen romance type level, which I also indulge myself in. I'll admit it. I'm reading in the Loney book that Diana, she was a princess at the time, had the hots for John F. Kennedy Jr. And she went after him. But he happened to be dating Daryl Hannah, the actress, at the time. So he accepted the dinner date, and then he canceled out, probably because Daryl Hannah's like, you are not going to be having dinner with that bitch. No way. You know? So they canceled out, and she had a numbering system. We're talking about Diana now. She was a very circumspect, with all due respect, she was a nice, genuine humanitarian, I think. But she also had this other side to her, which I want to know about. But she had a numbering system. So JFK Jr. was was called Number Nine. I think I forgot who was number one. And she had a whole list of guys that she was going to go after. So it's not just Sheriff Ferguson who's skanky.
Brightmore wants to know, did Boys Town benefactors, Creighton University and Creighton Medical University Hospital, a Catholic hospital, do experiments with Boys Town kids?
That I don't know. I don't rule that out. I didn't know there was a connection institutionally with Boys Town and Creighton University. I do know, though, that there was a guy who was a psychologist, master's degree from UCLA. His name was K. Patrick Okura. Father Flanagan's people took him out of a concentration camp during World War II. He was Japanese American, you know, one of my people. He hired him out of a concentration camp and made him the head of psychological services for Boys Town. Perfect. So it just shows you the continuity of the different carceral systems of control from concentration camp to orphanage. So yeah, there's these weird, weird, strange historical connections that we're only now beginning to make. Maria Farmer?
Yes, Dave. I remember that interview. I listened to that. Maria Farmer told Whitney Webb that Glenn would laugh at the deliberate humiliation of Princess Diana. All right, so question from Lulu. How do we dismantle this toxic system? Well, we're shining a light on it. That's the start.
Yes. I think having people who experienced, as awful as it is, to speak their truth on shows like the Sean Atwood Show. I mean, these are lots of women that I didn't even know they existed. But it's incredible. The stories they're telling us, the strength that they exhibit, and they are creating this storehouse of information that we can learn from. Because a lot of it is just so out of our everyday experience that it's hard to wrap our minds around some of these accusations that are being made. So yeah, truth-telling, journalism, real research is really the starting point of a process where we will triumph eventually. We're getting there.
Have you heard about the LDS Church of Satan scandal? I think they were the ones that used Charlie Kirk as a ritual sacrifice.
Well, the last part I'm not so sure about. The LDS has been hit by scandal upon scandal upon scandal, even when its founders were alive. So, but I haven't heard anything specific about recent accusations of Satanism.
All right, Professor, you've answered all of the questions. Is there anything you'd like to say in conclusion?
Well, thank you very much for allowing me to share some of my perceptions. I will tell you that I live on the corridor, the North and South corridor in the far west of America, where all this super exploitation is going up and down. The University of California is one of the main institutes. They talk about Harvard and MIT, but I worked in the belly of the beast for over 20 years, where they are helping to facilitate this larger complex that we're speaking of today. I live, coincidentally, by the way, I'm living in the same city where Virginia Roberts was born. She was born in Sacramento. That's where I live. Her parents were married. Her grandparents were married not far from where I am now. It's a small world, right? But I've been living in the middle of this kill zone. I live close to the gold country, Calaveras County, because we're talking about a system here that's been in place for years and years. And I'm surrounded by skulls and skeletal remains. We even have a county in California called Calaveras County. Some of you might have read the story by Mark Twain, The Jumping Frog of Calaveras County. Well, that's not far from me, Calaveras. In Calaveras in Espanol means skull. There are so many bodies and skeletons and skulls, mostly of yellow people, Chinese workers, that they said, well, we're going to name it Skull County, Calaveras. And it also happens to be a big drawing region and energy spot for all these serial killers like Charles Ng. So anyway, I'm just trying to present to the audience my bona fides, why I'm so passionate about this topic here. It's not simple voyeurism for my part. It's a matter of survival.
And it's a matter of your survival, folks. If you don't go and subscribe to the professor, I'm putting his link in the live chat right now. And if you're watching on replay, the link is in the description box. Huge thank you for coming on, my friend. Always a great pleasure to hear your thoughts. And hope to speak to you soon. You take care.
Thank you, sir. Bye.
Thank you. Cheers. Bye. All right, folks. Yep. Please support the professor at his channel. The link is down there. And I'll just let you guys know what we've got coming up. We've got quite a bit coming up, actually. Looks like we've got David Icke's son coming on. This one's just popped up on the dashboard. Gareth Icke. This is on the 30th, the day before Halloween. Woo-hoo! He's going to be talking about secret societies and Israel. That should be interesting. Tomorrow is the 28th. What did Chester B. Avicii and Anthony Baldwin know? The Silent Children Project. DJ Petrovsky. Shane's getting us loads of guests that we've never had on the channel before. That's what's happening here. Which is fascinating. Last night's guest was phenomenal. We did really well with Joseph Scott Morgan. I think it's at 70,000 views overnight. Yeah, that's phenomenal. Jesse on Fire is coming back on the 29th. And Kayla Betts is also coming back to look at Charlie Kirk theories and conspiracies. And then on Halloween, we've got Epstein's death, the truth revealed. So thanks for tuning in to all these shows, folks. And hope to see some of you in the future live streams. And I hope to get Kirby Summers on as soon as possible as well. So let me know, Kirby, if you're still watching, if you're available this week sometime earlier in the day, of course, whatever would suit you. All right.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters. On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at coda.com.